left off in the previous year discussing when Talmud Torah comes into conflict with Kibbud Av Va'em, so which one wins out. So the Gemara has a whole Darasha derived from the series of Pesukim and Sefer Bereishis about the chronology of Yaakov Avinu's running around, where it comes out that there were 14 years that were missing in the calculation, and those 14 years, Chazal had a tradition that he actually went back to whatever that means, the Yeshiva Shem Vever, to go to involve in the Limud HaTorah, and as such wasn't held responsible for the lack of Kibbud Av Va'em during those years. So we actually learned that a Din L'Doiros, for a real halacha from this, that Talmud Torah overrides Kibbud Av Va'em. The question is, what exactly are the parameters of this? What does that mean, that Talmud Torah comes to conflict with Kibbud Av Va'em? So there is a sugya in Maseches Avodah Zarah, the second parak, where the Gemara discusses in Issam in the Rabbanon of Tumas Kohanim. Now, normally, Tumas Kohanim is a din min haTorah. Obviously, a Kohen is not permitted to become Tamei Lameis Midaraisa. But sometimes you have a situation where the Issar involved is only in Issam in the Rabbanon. So some of the examples of the Rabbanon, the Gemara says that you can have what's called the Beis HaPras. The Beis HaPras is an area where there was a kever here at one time, there was a dead body here at one time, but the field area subsequently been plowed, and we're not even sure there really is any bones left. It's a chashash, a sofek. So the Gemara says that that area would still be prohibited for a kohen to go to Midrabanan. The Gemara gives another example of a to Midrabanan, Eretz Amim. For a kohen to go to Chutz La'aretz, is also, we assume that you never really know for sure where there are people buried in Chutz La'aretz. They didn't take care of their cemeteries as well. And there's always a chashash, there's always an outside chance that maybe the kohen is becoming tamei. That's a whole question in the postgame, why that didn't doesn't apply Bismanazah. Or maybe it does apply Bismanazah. I guess any Kohanim were here or assuming that it doesn't apply Bismanazah. That's a whole question as to what exactly the parameters of that did. Another time, another place. But the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that when we deal with these not real tumas derais, only tumas derabanan, so Chazal gave certain kulas, gave certain leniencies. When there's some big tzorech, so then they look the other way. If it would be a deraisa, only pekuch nefesh is mati deraisa. It's only a derabanan, so they gave certain kulas. What are some of the kulas that they gave? The Gemara says that person has to go find the shidduch. They're sitting in Eretz Yisrael for years, they can't find a shidduch. Someone tells them there's a good shidduch in America. So then the Gemara says, even bizman, the mikdash, they're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to go, even though they're a Kohen, it's Tumas Eretz Am, etc. Person tells you that there's a singles event in a basic process. You have to go find a shidduch, you have to go tell me Tumas de Rabbanan, so you're allowed. That's one of the examples the Gemara gives. Then the Gemara gives an example of Parnassah. Person can't make a Parnassah in Eretz Yisrael, so they have to go to Chutz La'aretz to make a Parnassah. It would also be acceptable. So part that's relevant for our sugya is, the Gemara says, what if a person wants to go and learn Torah? So a person is sitting there to stroll and say, there's no one to learn with, there's nothing to learn with, no yeshiva, nothing. The only way for him to go learn is either to travel through a Beis HaPras or for him to go to Chutz La'aretz. So the Gemara says, also, they lifted these Yisurim with the Rabbanan for these very, very big Yitzurachim. So Gemara then, in that context, quotes the Machlekes HaTanoim. What do you mean that we lift an Isser for the purposes of Talmud Torah? What do those words mean? So one Tana says that there's mamish nothing to learn. It means he can't learn in Eretz Yisrael, or he can't learn the place that he is. He's going to learn absolutely nothing. He's going to become a big Amaretz. The only way for him to learn anything is for him to travel into the past the Beis HaPras, for him to travel to Chutz La'aretz. So that tremendous tzorach of Talmud Torah is doich whatever Yisurim the Rabbanan there are. Then the Gemara quotes another Tana and says, no. What if there's yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael? There's a very fine yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, very fine rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, but he has this thing in his head that he's got to go learn in yeshiva plenty. The yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, is it, as in today's lingo, it's not my derech halimud, the 17-year-old kid tells me what his derech halimud is. It's not my derech halimud, it's not my style. I need a close relationship with a rebbe. I need a smaller shia. Gives you a whole shtick of Torah as to what, and the only place that fits his bill happens to be in America. So he wants to know, can he come, can he leave Eretz Yisrael? Can he go be mitameh for Tumas Eretz Amim? Can he go travel? The yeshiva that he wants to go to is being housed in a base of pras. So he wants to know, is he allowed to go or not? So according to one Tana, that's absurd. According to one Tana, that's not called Tzorech Talmud Torah. As long as you have a place equally, you have a place to learn. That's a viable option. It doesn't have to be perfect for you. That's not called the Tzorech Talmud Torah. And the other Tana says, no. The other Tana says, Lo mikol adam, adam zoich elomayt. That a person isn't always zoich to learn from everybody. That means for him, in his mind, he thinks that he's going to learn better in the other place. So that's also called the Tzorach of Talmud Torah. So Mikra, then we paskin like that. We paskin like the second time, that's also considered to be the Tzorach Talmud Torah, even though it's not that it's an absolute necessity, but he feels, honestly, it's going to improve his learning. So the improvement of a person's learning is also considered to be a tzorach tamat Torah. That's the chiddush of this Tana. So the poskim nuchas ki ravim quote this sugya maseches of Erizara, and they say, what would the din be if a parent says to a child, I'm perfectly okay with you learning. You can sit and learn for the next 10 years, as long as you're learning across the street. So the guy's, but I don't want to learn across the street. The Betty Yeshiva is out of town. So now the question becomes, is that called a tzorech of Tamat Torah or not? So according to the first Tana, no. According to the first Tana, if there's a place to learn, so we should, you have to do Kibra Vayim and learn as well. And the second Tana would say no. But since you really want to learn in a better place, better, different, whatever it is, and you think that that's going to be better for you, so that's called the Tzorech Tamat Torah, and that would also have the ability to override Kibra Vayim. So Me'ikra Din, that's what we paskin. It says, Shulchan Aruch quotes that Me'ikra Din, that's what we paskin, like the second Tana, that's also considered to be the Tzorech Tamat Torah. However, the later post can point out that one has to be very, very careful before plugging this into Lamaisa, because sometimes the child is not a bar hochi to even make that assessment. I mean, he's going to decide where he's going to learn better. As if you're talking about a clear-cut situation that learning in another place is objectively better, and a better chavrusa, a better rebbe, a better shira, okay. But very often it's not like that. Very often it's, you have to be careful that the child is sometimes putting other factors into the equation. He tells you he wants to learn in yeshiva plenty because the food is better. Questions, what does that mean? If he's not going to be hungry in the first yeshiva, he won't be able to learn. He's been grumbling during morning said, okay. But the Baruch Hashem, I think most places today have already passed that, even the tough places have passed that point. But if there are, he likes the gym better than the other yeshiva, he likes the social better, so you have to know. So if there are things that will really truly change his mahalach and limud Torah, that those extra things will really improve his ability to learn better. That's part of the cheshbon. But if it's not, he will learn just as well. And so if he's coming to ask a shayla, so then you have to take into consideration Kibra Avim does play a factor. So we don't say that every decision a child makes, Kibra Avim is meaningless. Just Torah and yeshiva, that's all that matters. That's a factor. It's an important factor. But Kibra Avim also has to be reckoned into the calculation as well. As we spoke about in the past, when we spoke about when a child has a conflict between the mitzvah of Kibra Vayim and getting married and the mitzvah of Kibra Vayim living in Eretz Yisrael, these are big, heavy-duty life decisions. So a person has to really, really get proper guidance as to how to balance Kibra Vayim properly and how to balance the decision as well. Sometimes there's an extra halachic factor also. Sometimes the halacha may be that it's mutter for you to leave your parents and to go learn yeshiva. That may be the official psach. It may not be the wisest move. There may be other things that you can lose down the line by doing that. So again, these are very individualized shilas. But in terms of the basic halachic principle, so it's based on this idea that Tamat Torah does override Kibra Vayim, and at least to a certain extent, even improvements in Tamat Torah can also override Kibra Vayim. However, there's an important exception to this rule when we speak about Tamat Torah and coming into conflict with Kibra Vayim. So the Pesach Tshuva already quotes from the earlier Poskim that, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's the Tshuva Saradvaz, that points out the following distinction. That when do we say that Tamat Torah overrides Kibra Vayim? That's when you're talking almost in a global sense. You're talking like Yaakov Avinu. Avinu went to go learn for 14 years. That's a big chunk of time. What if you have a situation where a person is not being asked not to learn? A person's not being asked to leave yeshiva. A person's being asked to leave night seder for one night to come to the cousin's wedding. So every time the parent comes with a request, so the child can hide behind his din and say, Tamatar, Kedega Kulam, Tamatar is greater than Kibra Vayim, and I'm not going to the cousin's wedding. So the Pesach Tshuva quotes that. He doesn't quote the cousin's wedding, but he says, no, he says, the parent calls you every once in a while. He's not asking you to stop learning. He's not asking you to leave the yeshiva. He's not asking you to come move back home. He's asking you every once in a while to help and to help around the house, to be mishap, to come home and clean your room, to do something that the parent wants you to do. So the Pesach Tshuva writes, that's not called a bittul of Torah. That's called the mitzvah of Kibra Vayim on a one-time basis, overriding Tamat Torah. He says, that's for sure, he thinks that would be the din. That the child is supposed to come home, it's supposed to help the parents out, and then go back to the yeshiva. So when we speak about Tamat Torah overrides Kibra Vayim, that means if it's going to really make a tremendous impact, he's not going to learn in a yeshiva for 3 years, he's going to miss one night seder, so that's not going to be the end of the world. So he should not close his gemara, do Kibra Vayim, and then come back to the yeshiva. as we spoke about also in the past, when we're speaking about these kinds of kibbutz of aims, so there's also the difference between whether the parent is asking you to do something that affects them or doesn't affect them. So if it's something that's service to the parent calls you and says, you know, please, I need you to come and help me take care of something in the house and leave, you know, cut out a nightstand for one night. So that's what the Pesach Teshuvah is talking about. Because there the parent is calling you to do something that's parent-oriented. What if the parent is telling you to do something that's not really parent-oriented? The parent just, I'm giving you a request. They want you to come to this class, they want you to come to this event. So, as we said in the past, then it's probably governed by the rules of Mora. The Mora means when a parent puts forward a request, even if the request doesn't physically affect the parents, but just the fact that I am listening, that's a mitzvah of Mora. And the fact that I'm not listening, that's a violation of Mora. But when it comes to Mora Avayim, then we also pointed out that it depends on just how realistic the request is. If the parent calls you up, they like that's 95 degrees and says, put on a sweater, so that's not such a realistic request. Mm-hmm. And the poskim say that that's not considered to be a lack of Mora. Parent calls you up on a cold day and says, please put on a sweater. A person is not bound to put on that sweater based on Kibbutz Avayim, but they may be required to put on that sweater based on Mora Avayim. So here also, the parent calls you up in the middle of learning, and the parent comes up with a request and says, I want you to come and attend this and this simcha. So if it's a reasonable request, so then I'm supposed to close my Gemara and go and do it. If it's a totally unreasonable request, so I should try to explain to my parents why it's an if I can, try to explain what's an unreasonable request. Now, of course, what constitutes reasonable, what constitutes unreasonable is going to be very, very subjective, and no doubt the parents and the children will be fighting forever as to what's called reasonable or not. Okay, so I guess if your parents call and say, listen, your brother's getting married, it's time to leave nightstand, that's probably pretty reasonable. They come and tell you that your fourth cousin, three times removed, is having a bas mitzvah. So I don't know, the bas mitzvah will go on without you being there. The problem is everything in between. So the person has to use Seichel Yashar to figure out what's considered to be how upset the parents are. The parents are very upset, so then you should not close your gemara, go and then go back.
So from the parents' perspective, what should the parameters be in terms of a request? If they understand it's going to be bittul Torah.
Right, so the parents are not. I think the parents should also, you know, in the perfect world, the parents should be judging what's reasonable or not. So it is reasonable to tell them to come home, to come participate in a close family simcha. It's not reasonable to expect them to do, you know, a lot of other things that are not necessarily so critical. So you're right, you know, we would hope that there will be that harmony between the parents and children, and somehow we'll get the proper balance between Kibbutz and Mora in contrast to Talmud Torah. Since we have been learning a lot of the last couple of months, a lot of the sugyas of really both halves of the sugyas of Maseches Kedushin in terms of the parents' responsibility to the children and the children's responsibility in terms of the parents, so I thought we'd just end off a little bit on a little, I can call it halacha, machshav, machshav, whatever you want to call it, since this is the last year, I think, for this man. The Gemara has a comment in Maseches Kedushin where the Gemara talks about the mitzvah of Mora Avaim. The Gemara raises the question, why does it say Ish Imo V'Aviv Tira? Why does it say Aim before an Av? In contrast to Kibud, it's the other way around. There it says Av before an Aim. So Rashi quotes from the famous Maimon Chazal that the reason why the Torah flips the order is to tell me a Chiddush. Namely, when it comes to Kibud Av Aim, so Kibud is more of a service, is more of a almost an expression of love. Like we said, the Ramban says in Parshas Yisrael, when you do things for somebody, that shows that you love the person. So Kibbutz Avayim, it's almost a chiddush that the Torah has to say, you have to love your father also. You have to be mechabed your father also. Because a person may have thought, his mother, you know, his mother's very nice to him, his mother, you know, mishtat lasa b'dvarim, she's softer to him. So that he understands Kibbutz. The father, maybe the father's a little tougher on him, maybe the father was he's a little bit more afraid of the father. So it's a chiddush at the Torah that even the father, you have to be mechabed. And the Gemara says the opposite is true when it comes to Ish Imo V'Aviv Tiro, that the fact that you have to be Moira from your father, that anybody can figure out. The fact that you have to have Moira from your mother, that's like a Chiddush. So the Chiddush is Ish Imo V'Aviv Tiro. The Gemara doesn't say it's always that way. Some family dynamics are the other way around. Sometimes people are more afraid of their mother and the father's the softy in the family. Okay, Yesh V'Yesh. But the Gemara says in general terms, so Ish Imo V'Aviv Tiro is a Chiddush that even the mother you have to have Moira from. So it's interesting when the Gemara tries to highlight this idea that you have to have Moira from your mother also. What was the Havamina? So like some yeshivas spent a lot of time on the Havamina. What was the Havamina? The Havamina was a father I have Moira. Father that I understand. Moira is a Chiddush. What characteristic of the mother-child relationship is it that's almost lacking that Moira that the father child relationship has. So if he would have asked me, I would have said, the father, you know, he's a little stronger. That's what I would have said. So the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, what is it about the father-child relationship that creates more of a sense of mora, that to a certain degree may be lacking with the mother? The Gemara says that the father is melamdo Torah, that since the father teaches him Torah, so somehow that creates the mora. So all of a sudden now we don't get the image of mora coming because he's a big tough guy. Mora comes because he's telling you a taisus, that's the mora. So what's the kamash balam? So now that we learned the havamina, what's the maskana? So the havamina was, the father teaches you Torah, so then I understand that you have to carry, you have to have mora. So what's the mother doing? So the kamash balam, I think, is, the kamash balam is that the mother's also teaching you Torah. What does it mean she's teaching you Torah? It doesn't mean she's teaching you the taisus necessarily, that we spoke about in some of the previous shiurim, but it means that the mother is teaching you, I don't want to say a more important, less important, equal important, whatever you want to call it, but the mother is part of the transmission of Torah as well. Because the Shema B'ni Musa Avich V'atita Shtar Simecha, so we know there's much to be said. Those who want to read that the Rav has one of his beautiful pieces, the famous Hesped that he gave about the different roles of men and women in terms of transmission of the Mesorah. So a woman transmits the Mesorah in her way as well, and the important the way that the Torah envisions for the transmission of Torah from mother to, not just mother to daughter, mother to son is also part of the transmission of the Mesorah. So I think that perhaps the Maskana Segemara is that Mora is fundamentally linked to Melamdo Torah. That's almost the mechayev of Mora, is the role that the parent has in terms of Melamdo Torah. Kibud Avayim, that emanates from, as we spoke about in the past, that emanates from Gimel Shutfin B'Yodom, that's Hakaras HaTov, and that makes you appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Borei of you. That's a whole different parasha. But Mora is ultimately an expression of Ibnation Melamdoso Torah, both in the formal sense of the father to child and in the informal sense of the mother to child as well. And where does that come from exactly? This idea that Mora is almost a corollary of Melamdo Torah. So this is not surprising because we find Mora associated not just with parents, we find Mora with other figures of authority within the Jewish community, but particularly those figures of authority that are also involved in the transmission of the Mesorah. So who do we find Mora first besides parents? We find there's a mitzvah of Es Hashem Lekecha Tira L'Rabos Tamid HaChamim. There's a mitzvah of having Mora towards one's, towards Tamid HaChamim. So even though the Gemara uses the phrase Tamid HaChamim, which almost is an all-inclusive group, so Tosfos points out in the Maseches Bava Kamma that this din of Mora Es Hashem Lekecha Tira L'Rabos Tamid HaChamim is speaking primarily to one's Rebbe. We spoke a lot about this in one of the Monday Shurim early in the Monday night Shurim in Ashul earlier in the year. Tosfos says that the din of L'Rabos Tamid HaChamim, there's a din of Mora and Tamid HaChamim, that doesn't mean there's Mora on any given Tamid HaChamim I have no relationship to. The Mora is towards the Tamid HaChamim, who's my Tamid HaChamim, my Rebbe Muvok, so then there's a special mitzvah of Mora too. The Rambam also holds this way. The Rambam in Hilchos Tamid Torah, so it presents the dinim of Kavod of Tamid HaChamim in two different parakim. He quotes one parak about Kavod in general, Tamid HaChamim, a person I don't have a relationship with, he's a Tamil Chacham, so I have to stand up for him, to show him covered, hida, whatever that means. And then the Ram is a whole different parak for a Rebbe Muvak, someone who taught me most of my Torah. So then not only are there dinim of covered, the Ram says there are dinim of Meir as well. There are enough kaminas, la halacha, la differences between covered due to regular Tamil Chachamim and Mora due to a Rebbe Muvak. Just derech agav, Taisus writes in Bava Kamma that din of Rabbi Muvok doesn't only apply to my personal Rebbe, it applies to the Rebbe of the generation also. Taisus writes, if you have a Chacham who's a Muflug Bidoro, someone who stands out, someone who's a Psagar Lador, so he has the status of a Rebbe Muvok. Why is that? I never met him. I never met Rav Moshe. I never learned from Rav Moshe. The answer is, when you have a Rabbi, a Gadol Ador, you inevitably are his Talmud, whether you know it or not. Because the Chacham Muflog, by his very nature, so his Talmidim are going to be your Rebbeim, whether you know that or not. His Psachim are going to affect you, whether you know that or not. His leadership affects each and every person in the community. So that takes on almost like the status like a Rebbe Muflog. So there is a din of Mora that's geared towards Tamid Chacham in general a little bit, but mostly focuses on a Rebbe Muflog. Then there's another din of Mora that we find, and a Melech. You have to have Mora for a Melech as well. The Gemara says that actually the dinim of Mora for a Melech are more chomer than a parent, and more chomer than a Rebbe, to the extent that a Melech shemochel kvede ain't a mochel. Talmid Chacham can be meichel on his kavod, and a parent can be meichel on the kavod, but the king can't be meichel on his kavod. When the rastim sukim shete emasa alecha, this is the of ema and yira pacha that a person has to have towards the figure of a king. So the question is, what exactly is the mechayev of that? Where does that come from that the king deserves such a title of mora? So that comes from his position as commander in chief of the army. No, that's not why you have to have more of him. That comes from the fact that he's the top executive position in the government. No, that's not where it comes from either. I think that the ultimate mora that comes from the king is because the real role of the king, as the psukim say explicitly in Pasha Shoftim, the Torah is a special mitzvah for the king. The chasal of mishta terazos, the karbokoy mechayev, mantilma the yiras hashem akayim. That the king is supposed to be the role model of a talmid chacham. He's supposed to be the role model of a marbitz Torah. That's why when the Torah chooses every 7 years to have a mitzvah of hakel, so who gets up and reads the Rosh Hashanah doesn't do the reading, the Rosh Hashiva doesn't do the reading, the Melech does the reading, because the Melech's role is first and foremost, he's the leader, he's the figurehead of Klal Yisrael, and what defines Klal Yisrael is ultimately the Torah. That's what Rabbi Levi writes in his Sefer Kuzari, that the ultimate description of the nationhood of Klal Yisrael is Torah mitzvahs. Means maybe other, you know, when we talk about, you know, nationalism, so people talk about nationalism, common languages and common cultures and common, you know, different kinds of things. So Rita Levi writes that nationalism in Torah is Torah mitzvahs. That's what ultimately defines Klal Yisrael. So when you have the symbol of a nation, so the king gets up, he's representing the Jewish nation. So he gets up and he gives his, because it's not a State of the Union speech, it's a State of the Shemitah speech. Once every 7 years, he gives a speech to tell us, what are we all about? What are we doing? What are we got? So what does he do? He opens up Sefer Devarim and he starts reading. And he starts, Eilat Devarim, he gives a Divrei Torah. Because that's the very definition of what the king is all about. That's the definition of what the Mahus of Am Yisrael is all about as well. So I think that when the Torah gives us a mitzvah of Mora towards the king, so he's also, we're giving Mora not to the king in all his political hats, but rather as the spokesman for Torah for all of Klal Yisrael. So we find this common theme that every time we have a person who's in position of authority, and his authority is an expression of his Torah knowledge and his spreading of Torah knowledge, so all of a sudden the Torah throws at us a mitzvah of Mora. You have to have Mora for the father because he's teaching you the Tosfos, and Mora for the mother because she's teaching you how to make the brachas. And you have to have Mora for the Talmid Chacham, for the Rebbe, for the Gadol HaDor, because they're transmitting the Mesorah. Rebbe for the king, he's reading the Pesukim of Hakel. Every one of these people gets with them this added component of Mora. Where does all this come from? So the answer is obvious, that it all emanates from the ultimate Mora, the original mitzvah of Mora, which ultimately sets into motion all these Mora, is Esa Shem L'Kech Atira, that there's a mitzvah of Yerushimayim. So where did this mitzvah of Yerushimayim come from? How do we relate? It's a very, very vague mitzvah of Yerushimayim. So the Psukim say, at the end of Pashas Yisro, explicitly, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to teach us the model of Yerushimayim. At the very end of Matan Torah, so Klal Yisrael get ready. They're shaking. They say, we just saw the heavens opened up. We had a kolos of brachim and a kol shofar. It's just too scary. The beratayim marav al namus. They're afraid they're going to die. They couldn't handle anymore the tremendous hashras hashchida. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, don't worry. He says, you want to know why we just did this? Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu do this? V'avur nasayis eschem ba'alokim, v'avur tiyeh yirasa p'nechem v'vilti sechadol. So Moshe Rabbeinu says explicitly that the reason why you just experienced Matan Torah was tiyeh yirasa p'nechem v'vilti sechadol, that you should experience Yerushimayim. What the Torah is telling us is that the giving of the Torah itself didn't require Mamar HaSinai. Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, like he ultimately did at the end in Luchos Shniyot, come up, no one has to see anything, we don't need Kol Sabrachim, don't need Anan Kavod, we don't need Kol Shor, don't need any of that stuff. He said, come up, stay here for a few weeks, I'll write you a book, I'll give you a bal peh, and go back, and that's it. And Klal Yisrael doesn't have to see anything special. But Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't do it that way. Why? Because Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted Klal Yisrael to experience Mara HaShechina. He wanted them, they should see, whatever, kaviyachol, to see the Mara HaShechina, and that Mara HaShechina should imbue in them Yiras Shemayim, because ultimately one cannot learn Torah without Yiras Shemayim. Ultimately, one cannot that Yiras Shemayim is Reishis Chach B'Yiras Hashem. That a person has to have that acknowledgement, that Yiras Shemayim, that Mora Shechina, before one can even begin to learn Torah. So Yiras Shemayim is ultimately the legacy of Maamar HaSinai. That was the real purpose, the true purpose of Maamar HaSinai. The teaching Torah was almost a second hit. That was the Eidish Lema. But the real goal of Maamar HaSinai was to instill in Klal Yisrael the significance of Yiras Shemayim. The idea of Maamar HaSinai being something that instills in us Yiras Shemayim was not just a one-time shot. You have to have a constant Maamar HaSinai. You have to keep on going back to our roots, back to our Sinai all the time. So the Torah puts certain people in our lives, the authority figures, that their primary role is to reconnect us to Maamar HaSinai. First and foremost, parents. That's the most important goal of a parent, is to be the next link in the transmission, to transmit Maamar HaSinai, with all of that goes with it. The formal learning, the informal learning, the machshavas, everything that goes, that's the primary goal of a parent. We spoke a little bit about this earlier. We spoke about the mitzvah of Pentishkach Sadvar Mesher Roi Necha, that the goal of the parent is to be the next link in our Sinai. The Rebbe for sure is that, and the king is for sure that. That's the whole hakel, is obviously a Zeichel Maamar HaSinai. Everyone, the men, women, everyone comes together, to hear different Torah. That's obviously supposed to be the model of our Sinai repeating itself. So what the Torah perhaps is telling us is that all of these individuals who are called upon to transmit to the next generation the significance of Yiras Shemayim. So the Torah says, "Es Hashem l'kecha tira l'rabos tamichacham." The Torah gives us each imo of Yav Tira, as the Gemara says, "Kishem shamra kosov es Hashem l'kecha tira kach amra kosov ish imo of Tira." If a person is not going to relate to these figures with Mora, if a person's relationship with a parent is going to be a relationship of which is palsy, wowsy, and friends, and there's no Mora, and there's no Yira, and there's no appreciation of what a parent is in terms of a Mora factor. If a person's relationship to a Rebbe is going to be, we're just all pals, we just play ball together, and there's not going to be any of Mora. If a person's going to, you know, have no Mora for the king, it's going to be a slap the king in the back. I mean, if these are the people the Torah chooses to transmit us Yiras Shemayim, and we can't even muster up the Mora Benam L'Chavero, so how are we ever going to get to Mora Shemayim? So the same way we find in Kibbutz Avayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to use the model, We're mechabit our parents, and that's going to lead us to the role model of mechabit HaMakom. We're supposed to be mechabit the Rebbeim, and that's going to lead us to the role model of mechabit our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're supposed to be mechabit the King, and that's going to lead us to the role model of mechabit HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the same way that's true in Kibbutz, it's true in Mora as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to instill in us that appreciation of Mora. You have to start with the basics. You can't tell a 5-year-old kid, you can't tell a 50-year-old person, have Mora Shemayim, have Yiras Shemayim. You have to first appreciate what the feelings of Mora are towards the boss of Adam, and specifically those people who we show the proper covenant of Mora to, that would ultimately lead us down the line to the proper covenant of Mora to a Kiddush Baruch Hu. So we see him on the sugyas on the one hand, the parents' responsibilities to the children, and the children's responsibilities back to the parents. At the end of the day, it's all the same. It all emanates from the same. It's from that bridge, that connection, that parent-child relationship, the Rebbe-Tam relationship, it's such a special, important relationship in terms of our connection to Maamar HaSinai, that it carries with it responsibilities, both from parent to child, as well as from child to parent. Shabbat should give us the prophecy at Tishmaya, both as parents as the children, as everywhere we are along the spectrum, to perform our duties and responsibilities in a proper manner. Okay. All right, we'll show you.